is time to get up with LeBron James. Speaks at length about this layoff. We'll tell you why he has more at stake than anyone in the NBA. And 2 weeks tonight, and Vegas weighs in. What are the odds Tua drops at the draft? That answer might surprise you. And Tom Brady with Howard Stern talking about his legacy. I'll tell you why I'm the only one who believes every word he says as we get up with you starting right now on a Thursday. And I'm certain of that. From Bristol this morning, Mike Greenberg with you. Delighted you've chosen to get up with us. And again, first, foremost, and forever, what we do here, we're doing for all of you who are medical professionals and first responders. We thank you for all the work that we are doing, that you are doing. And the work we're doing is to try and keep you entertained as best we can here for the next 2 hours as we, as sports fans, get through all of this together. And we start as we get up and go. Dan Graziano was reporting that the NFL has been working to ensure technological issues don't result in major problems for the now entirely virtual NFL draft. The league is planning to build several safeguards and conduct multiple tests of this symptom. Meantime, in an Instagram live chat with Maria Taylor yesterday, Alabama's Nick Saban said he'd be open to moving the start of the college football season. We'll talk about that with Laura in just a few minutes. Elsewhere, Zach LaVine, Trae Young, and Chris Paul are among the players expected to participate in the NBA's upcoming horse tournament, which the league is finalizing plans for as we speak. And Trae Young himself had some fun on Twitter about this last night, tweeting first to former slam dunk champ Zach LaVine, absolutely no dunking, and then playing to his strengths, half-court shots only. My money's on Trae Young. We'll see. Meanwhile, LeBron James held court on a Zoom conference call with reporters last night, 4 weeks to the day since the NBA season was shut down. Here's some of what LeBron had to say about the chances of the league resuming at some point soon.
The line of communication is open, you know, not only from the owners, from the players, from the whole league, from Adam Silver and everyone. We want to continue to be in communication and see what possible ways we can get back going. And obviously the number one thing is the safety and the well-being of all of us here in America first and getting this pandemic under control. You know, I believe once that's under control and they allow us to resume some type of activity, I would love to get the season back going. You know, if it's in one single isolated destination like this Las Vegas or somewhere else that can, you know, hold us and keep us in the best possible chance to be safe, then those conversations will be had. Will there be another game this year with NBA fans in the stands? I don't know, but I truly hope so. We definitely hope that someday that we can get our fans back in the stands. It just makes the game so much better, not only just basketball, like I said, but sports in general. But we'll just see what happens.
All right, so LeBron James, optimistic and realistic, which is what we've tried to be here, and that is Jalen Rose, who was with us. And Jalen, I want to ask you a question that they asked me on First Take the other day, and I'm really interested to hear your response. You could argue that no one has more at stake from a basketball standpoint in a return than LeBron does. Do you believe that the resumption of this season is his best chance of winning a championship?
I do believe the resumption of this season is his best opportunity to win a championship. And for all fans of sports and large gatherings like concerts and whatnot, I'm starting to be relegated to believe that we will have to be entertained without fans in the stands for the remainder of 2020. Now, again, I'm hoping that when NFL starts in September, I'm hoping the NBA can resume in late July or August. But if it does, I heard LeBron's commentary, it won't be with fans in the stands, in my opinion. And if you look at LeBron James in his 17th year, Greeny, at his age, when you build a squad around him, of course Anthony Davis is an anchor, but then all of a sudden you look deeper into the roster, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Avery Bradley, Danny Green, Rajon Rondo, they don't have long-term situations with the Lakers. They were brought there to try to win a championship this year. So therefore, if this squad isn't playing, what happens next year to a Kyle Kuzma, who really didn't fit in with Anthony Davis and LeBron because he got injured as the season started? So for LeBron, other teams are ascending. The Clippers in their own building. The Bucks in the Eastern Conference with Giannis, who's probably going to win this year's MVP. So absolutely, this is LeBron's window. If they don't get it done this year, I don't believe it happens.
I agree. And if it winds up not coming back, then I think it does cost him his best chance to win another championship, which is as important as we want to make it. We're a sports show. From a sports perspective, that's obviously very important. I would throw in Golden State in that conversation, Jalen. When they all come back, and we assume they will, and add a piece or two here or there, if they do resume this year, and we all hope that they will, whether there are fans in the stands or not, do you believe the Lakers are the favorite to win it?
I believe the final weekend of the NBA before it got shut down, I was fortunate enough to be in Los Angeles. And I was in the building to watch the Lakers beat the Bucks. I was in the building to watch the Lakers beat the Clippers. Green Mamba, that was the best basketball that they were playing all season. And if this was collegiate basketball, they would have been the number one seed. So at that point, I say the Lakers were the best in basketball, but once we resume, you got to reset the clock, and that might change. Now, all of a sudden, Kawhi Leonard ain't going to really need to load manage. Paul George is not going to be as hampered by the injuries that plagued him all year. And so based on that, I still have to put Clippers in pole position in Los Angeles if and when things resume.
Maybe. The argument I would give you against that, Jalen, is maybe the rest. Again, I hate to even put it in those in that perspective because obviously what we're dealing with is so much more important. But from a purely basketball standpoint, LeBron James is playing a lot of minutes. He's been playing every game. He's carried a lot of the load. Maybe the time off would actually benefit him more than anybody else.
It's a two-way street, but just looking at the chessboard, what ends up happening is LeBron is going to be the primary ball handler for the Lakers. The Clippers have multiple people that can make him work to get the ball up in an operating area and actually be efficient. In the final game they played against the Clippers, they ran a lot of coverages that they wouldn't run late in the season or they wouldn't run in the playoffs. They weren't doubling LeBron. They weren't running somebody at him. You have Beverly. You have Kawhi. You have Paul George. You have multiple people that you could throw at LeBron and make him work. They still have to develop other primary ball handlers. Can Rajon Rondo, can Caruso actually get them into their offense? Can they feature AD with LeBron on the floor? Those were still questions the Lakers needed to answer.
I tell you what, it feels good to talk a little basketball. One way or the other. All right, later in the show, Jalen, I'm going to ask you, who would win a game of horse if the entire NBA participated? We'll do that a little later. Great to have Jalen back with us here. In the meantime, to the NFL draft, because we are 2 weeks to the day now until the first picks are made, and we will finally learn which team will roll the dice on Tua Tagovailoa. While most mock drafts have him projected fifth to the Dolphins, our ESPN NFL draft predictor doesn't see him lasting that long. According to our model, we have Tua most likely to be selected third overall at over 50% chance. You see it there on your screen. That pick is owned right now by the Lions. Of course, the Dolphins could move up there. Right now, there's only a 23% chance that Tua winds up getting picked at number 5 overall. And we're at that time of the year where all the different rumors start to swirl around 2 weeks away from this draft. And here are my guys for this morning. Dan Orlovsky and Marcus Spears are here. And, you know, Danny, you were making an interesting point as we all sort of weigh the risk and reward of Tua. You were making an interesting point in our meeting this morning. I'd love you to share because it's something I haven't really heard other people say.
Yeah, Greeny, we're not giving Tua enough credit for his toughness. And if you remember the movie The Program, right, we learned that there's a difference between playing hurt and playing injured. You can't play injured. It's going to make the situation worse. But can you play hurt? And playing hurt is about a physical toughness and a mental toughness and a grit that's inside of you. And we watched Tua play hurt in that SEC title game a couple years ago. And then we watched him come back and play in the national title game against Clemson, hurt. We watched him play against LSU this year, hurt, where he threw for 420 yards and 4 touchdowns against a really good defense. And so, you know, durability matters, of course, but so does toughness and so does grit. And the good thing with Tua is he has displayed that. And Greeny, the last thing I would say about it is this. The top three free agent quarterbacks this year in the NFL were Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and Teddy Bridgewater. And I know it's convenient right now. Everyone wants to write Tua's tombstone, but they wanted to do that to Tom Brady when he tore his ACL. And they wanted to do it to Drew Brees when he ripped up his shoulder. And they wanted to do it to Teddy Bridgewater when he ripped up his knee. It didn't stop those guys. Those catastrophic injuries did not stop those guys because they're mentally, physically tough, and they've got grit. And I think that Tua has displayed that, and we need to give him more credit for it.
It's an interesting way of looking at it because it's sort of the opposite of what we usually discuss with him. So, Marcus, again, as one who probably saw every snap of his career covering it for the SEC Network, you just saw that our model has the likeliest spot for him to go at number three. Do you think he is – would you be willing to roll the dice on trading up if you're the Dolphins or taking him third overall?
Absolutely, G. Look, I'm going where I've been all season long when it comes to this, when we've been having this discussion. We are not talking about giving Tua $60 million to walk in the building. This is an opportunity for the Dolphins not only to hit a grand slam, and if the durability concerns come to rear his ugly head, you know what? That's just a bullet that you have to bite and you start back over. But when I look at Tua and his ability and what I watched Tua do at Alabama with his arm, the way he led a team with a lot of talent around him, I would take that chance on the kid. Now, look, we can't get over the fact that there's durability concerns. That's something that you cannot, through this draft process, get past with just saying, well, he's tough and he played through it. I agree with Dan. That's a quality that you want in your quarterback. But for as long as this draft has been going on, since I have had the ability to watch it and understand it, when guys have injury concerns, it costs them sometimes in this process. And in Tua's situation, obviously what happened at Alabama, beyond the hip, him playing through injury, but also having those injuries is an issue.
Very quickly, because you just said you don't have to spend $60 million on him. I get that. If you're the Dolphins and you take him at five, that's one thing. They have three first-round picks. If you start mortgaging a lot more than just one, if you start trading stuff, now you are giving up a lot. Are you willing to do that quickly?
But, gee, yes. Yes, I am willing to do it because they addressed a lot of their issues in free agency. And the draft process is not the only process that you get your team better. So it's a lot of other avenues that they can use to become better in Miami if you have a franchise quarterback.
Okay, we will talk much more about this. Dan and Marcus with me all morning long. And Bobby Carpenter will jump in as well. Meanwhile, coming up, we have not heard a whole lot from Nick Saban until now. He has talked to Maria Taylor yesterday. We'll tell you why Alabama's coach thinks all options have to be on the table right now. That's coming up next. And then Tom Brady talking about his legacy yesterday. You'll hear what he said and why no one but me believes him. All that and more on the way. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
There may be no games,
no practices,
no high fives,
but we're all still part of a team,
and we all have a role to play.
Right now, that means keeping our distance,
but still checking on each other,
helping the most vulnerable,
and supporting our heroes
that are keeping us safe.
Sports may be paused,
but the best parts
are needed now more than ever.
So let's all do our part to help our team
right now.
Back on Get Up, Nick Saban joined our Maria Taylor for a chat on Instagram Live yesterday, hit on a variety of topics, including the possibility of moving the start of the 2020 college football season. Here's what he said.
All you can come up with is some, like, alternative plans, you know, what ifs, like, what if we can come back in the summer? You know, I think we need to have a lot of contingent plans as to what do we do if we can't come back in the summer? What do we do if we can't come back in the summer? Do we move the season, you know, maybe a little bit forward so that we can prepare the players correctly.
A lot of preparing for a lot of different scenarios, and our Laura Rutledge has been in the middle of all of this talking to everyone. Good morning, Laura. What sorts of things are you hearing along those lines about the kinds of plans that coaches and programs are making right now?
Yeah, Greeny, it's just fluid and it continues to be that. And I think it will be for a long time. The one good thing from the college football standpoint is they do have time on their side and they're going to continue to just reassess as they get to certain benchmarks. Most of these leagues are going to reassess around the end of May, early June. And you heard Coach Saban mention the summer. I think the main deadline here for a lot of these programs is looking around July 15th and saying, hey, if we could be back in some way, shape or form on campus at that point, then maybe the season starts on time. But as you heard Saban mention there, if that's not the case, then you just keep pushing it back as far as you can. One thing that I want to mention that I think is an interesting anecdote here, I heard from somebody very close to one of these particular conversations who said that one college coach came to them from a conference standpoint and said, hey, what can we do here to make sure that our players are seeing optimism? They're trying to put out as much optimism as possible right now, because Greeny, yes, we need to be realistic about this, but we're talking about young men who have had something very important taken away from them right now, and they're trying to find every way possible to continue to provide an encouraging message. I think that's what's a big part of all of this as we continue to talk about all of it.
That's interesting. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about something you told us yesterday, because I think it was fascinating and we didn't have enough time to get into it. We have seen that college football and college sports in general are divided up by conferences, and frequently one hand doesn't seem to know what the other hand is doing. We saw it at the NCAA tournament or the tournaments leading up to that, the conference tournaments, where there was such confusion about who was going to cancel and who wasn't. You mentioned yesterday the possibility that different conferences may be viewing this differently and may actually react differently based upon geography. What more can you tell us about that?
Well, look, we're all just trying to figure out where this virus will spread and how it will go through the country. And that's a big part of this from a regional standpoint. These conferences are based in regions of the country. And so if you think about it, and this is so far down the road right now, but it is a possibility. Let's say that the ACC, for instance, looks at their schools and says, you know what? It's safe for us to go ahead and play, just play each other, even though maybe there are parts of the country who can't play college football on time or can't play at all. But each conference could make their own decision here and say, you know what, we're going to have a season and we're just going to play each other, which you just think about all of the possibilities there, the can of worms that it opens, but the fascinating prospect of it potentially happening. I think the main point in all of this is that every league and college football in general is going to do everything possible to keep its players and coaches safe, but also to find a way to maybe play football.
I think that's such an interesting and important point. Remember back in the basketball tournament, some of them were canceled, others weren't. One team, they actually played half a game and then canceled their tournament at that point. So if you think these things are impossible, I would say we have already seen some variation on it. Laura, excellent. Thank you. We'll come back and we'll talk about actual players a little bit later in the show with you. Meanwhile, I got Bobby Carpenter with me here this morning as well as part of the group. And Bobby, I know I saw in your notes that you have similar thoughts on this, that where you are there in Ohio, for example, they're making plans and they believe they're going to start to play.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think if you look at it, people that I've talked to, you know, in the Ohio State University, they believe probably early June things might start to change in Ohio. And then if you look back on this, by the time they get to mid-June, I think people will be pretty comfortable with everything that's going on. And the fact that Ohio, I think, is kind of ahead of some other areas. So this could be highly regionalized from a standpoint of where things are going and what exactly is going to happen.
Can you imagine that? I mean, Marcus, I'm trying to envision this. Obviously, we deal primarily in the professional sports leagues. They all do things in uniform fashion for obvious reasons. Colleges are all these different broken up places. Could you see a reality in which they're playing in the SEC and they're playing in the Big Ten, but they're not playing in the Pac-12 because the circumstances there are so different?
Absolutely, G. And look, to your point and what Bobby said as well, and Laura mentioned it, regional. Like this, the SEC, if they can play conference games, they're going to play them. We are at a point. The thing that everybody needs to understand is that this obviously is uncharted territory and people are going to make adjustments based on what's in the best interest of what they have as a collective group. What I mean is if the SEC identifies that in the Southeast region, this thing is under control. They can figure out a way to play games. They're going to put them on TV. ESPN will be there to cover them. Like we have the opportunity, the obligation, I guess. And when you think about football and how much it means to not only this country, but to the players, like Laura mentioned, with these guys still holding out hope, they want to play some type of football. And if they can, they are going to make that happen.
And there's an enormous amount of money at stake, and no one should pretend that isn't a consideration, and it's not.
Absolutely.
There's nothing wrong with it being a consideration. Bobby, at the beginning of this, you were telling me that there's so much at stake in having fans in the stands. So much of the revenue comes from that, that they would be hesitant to do it without the fans. What are your thoughts right now regarding that, on the notion that they may have to play games without fans in the stands?
You know, I could see a scenario, Greeny, where they start the season without fans in the stands, but I don't think that that's a long-term solution, especially once you get into conference games. And this is going to be something that's going to be heavily regional. So I'm curious to see how the NCAA is going to try to look at this and legislate everything that's happening when you start looking at the fact and the possibility that, you know what, there's going to be areas of the country that are in far different situations. Is it a competitive advantage to have a set of fans in one stand versus not? And I think that that's kind of where we are. And then also, you look at, like you said, the economic impact. I don't know about the financial viability of doing that for an entire season.
It's fascinating. I will see if this is really the direction it goes. Obviously, there's a lot of time between now and then. We have a lot of time left this morning on Get Up. Just getting started as we continue. Attention, Buccaneers receivers. Tampa Tom has thoughts about your group, and you better listen closely. You'll hear what he expects from his new teammates next. Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Giveback, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We are back on Get Up. And yesterday, Tom Brady, as you probably are aware, was a guest on the Howard Stern Show, and it was an interesting and wide-ranging interview. And one of the things he said that I found most interesting was when he was asked about his legacy, he responded in a way that very few people seem to be willing to believe. This was what he said.
I never cared about legacy. I mean, I could give a about. That's never, I never once when I was in high school said, man, I can't wait for what my football legacy looks like. It's just not me. That's not my personality. So why would I choose a different place? It's because it was just time. I don't know what to say other than that. Like, I had done everything. I accomplished everything I could in 2 decades with an incredible organization, incredible group of people, and that will never change.
Let's go to the legacy part of this with Dan and Marcus. Dan, do you believe Tom Brady when he says he was not and is not concerned about his legacy?
I don't think he's motivated by his legacy, but it still matters to him. I mean, Tom Brady's legacy is etched into our minds. It's indisputable. But I do believe that Tom Brady's legacy is still being written by him. You know, I've said this. I think if he goes and wins another Super Bowl outside of New England, he's in the conversation for greatest athlete ever. He's in the Muhammad Ali and Babe Ruth and Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan conversations. And so I don't know that the motivation of legacy has ever been there, but his legacy matters to him both on and off the football field, Greeny.
How about you, Marcus? Do you believe him?
I believe him. It's about his perspective, though. Gee, think about this, man. Going back to the late, great Kobe Bryant, when we reflected on Kobe Bryant's life, the thing that we talked about was how he embarked on his family journey, his fatherhood. I think that's what's the most important to Tom Brady. So when you ask him about football, it's almost like it's defensive. Like, my legacy is really tied up into my family and Giselle, my wife, and making sure that everybody is straight. I look at this totally different. Obviously, Tom Brady knows his legacy in football, but 20 years ago, when he set out, he didn't didn't even know if he would ever become a starter in this league. So it was no way he was looking down the road saying, I want my legacy to be the greatest quarterback of all time. Those things tend to build as you build a career. But I think more so Tom Brady is talking about getting away from the football narrative and talking about what his legacy is off the field. I think that's what's most important to him. I think that's the point he was making.
I have two thoughts on this. And the first of them with regard to his football legacy is this is the definition of playing with house money. Because Brady's football legacy, I think, cannot be diminished. If he goes to Tampa and it doesn't succeed, I don't think in any way that it diminishes what he has accomplished. And if he goes there and does succeed, Dan, to your point, I think his legacy is only enhanced. So I think he is only up to go and literally has almost no downside from a legacy standpoint. But more importantly, Dan Orlovsky, you and I both know that Tom Brady is as one who reads a lot of these sorts of books about psychology and things like that. And if we were to use our favorite sport of golf as an example, you don't stand on the first tee when you're playing golf and think, I want to shoot 65 today. You think, I need to hit one good shot here, and then I'll worry about the next one, and then the next one, and I'll add it all up when I'm done. And I think that's what Brady is talking about. I think he's taking things one step at a time as they make sense, and then we'll add it all up, i.e. his legacy, at the end when he's done.
Yeah, I think Tom, that's why it's still getting written in his eyes. You know, his legacy has probably been a moving target, so to speak. And Marcus brings up a great point as well. Like, his legacy is going to be greater than football. It is going to be the impact of his teammates, an impact on his coaches. You know, legacy isn't something you leave for people. It's something you leave inside of people. And so all those people that Tom Brady is going to impact will be part of his legacy, whether football has been the vehicle or TB12 will be the vehicle. But to your point, Greeny, this is going to be something that Tom Brady will look back on and see how it's written. And right now, it's just not finished.
Let's get to one other thing he talked about yesterday. That is the issue, as they call it in the NFL now, of big trust. And that is the notion of the trust that he has with his receivers in particular, and how the folks in Tampa, particularly their star receivers down there, might be listening to this. This was more of Brady on the Howard Stern Show.
I would say, you know, I don't have any trust that this guy can help us, you know, win the game. I mean, I can definitely express my opinion to say, if you put him out there, I'm not going to throw him the ball, because I don't, right. You know, the whole team is trusting me to do what's right by the team. So you can't put someone out there that I don't believe in, because if I don't believe in him, then it's worthless for the team.
But that was really interesting, and I want to bring Bobby Carpenter back into the mix for this one, because, Bob, you were there in New England for one interesting period of time, and you had an up-close and personal look at a good example of this. Tell us that story.
Yeah, it was very interesting, because I get there in 2012, and we had the traditional offseason that everybody had been going through, where you have your OTAs, you have your mini camp, you go through all of that situation. Well, the previous season, they traded for Chad Johnson. He came in, he was coming off a Pro Bowl season a couple years before that, but in 15 games with the New England Patriots, he could only catch 15 balls in 2011. He could only get targeted 13% of the time. And all through the offseason, I watched Tom work with Chad, and I didn't understand why. I asked one of the receivers, and like, Tom just doesn't really like the way he runs his routes. It's not the fact that he can't get open. It's not the fact that he's not still good. It's the fact that when he's coming out of his breaks, Tom doesn't necessarily trust it, because it's a way that he's never seen a receiver operate before. And that bothered Tom. And so if you're not on the same page with him, it's never going to work.
So it's an interesting way of looking at it. So, Marcus, I'll come back to you here. So now you're Mike Evans and you're Chris Godwin, and you have the GOAT coming to Tampa. What do you think is going through their mind as far as how they're going to work with Tom?
Well, they have to have, first of all, you have to humble yourself, because if it's something that he doesn't like, he's the distributor of the football. And in order for you to have success, he's going to have to be on the same page with you. Obviously, that's what Bobby is saying. And to Tom Brady, he's going to have to understand that facilitating his relationships may be different. Look, to me, leadership has always been this, G, and this is basically what we're talking about, because everybody in Tampa is going to be looking for Tom Brady to add leadership, not only good play. Leadership is understanding how to approach guys in different manners to get through to them. That's what leadership is. It's not this one overall arching idea that you have for your receivers to be this and them to be better and be able to work with what you do. You have to adjust as well. And I think Tom Brady has been one of the best in this league at doing that for a long time, i.e. all the receivers that he's had and had success with. So when he goes into Tampa, he needs to figure out, obviously, what Mike Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, OJ Howard, Cameron Brate, who they are as people, but not only that, who they are as football players and how they think. And he has to adjust some things about what he does and his approach to them.
And Dan, you used video really well to give us an illustration of this past season here on Get Up. Let's do that again.
Yeah, Greeny, we took everyone. We saw it first, really, last year, the lack of trust. It was that Sunday night football game against the Houston Texans. And Brady's got that communication. He's trying to signal to the bottom of the screen. He sees the defense, and he's trying to get Dorsett to really run a double move. It's the perfect play call versus what Houston wants to run. And he throws the ball anticipating and trusting that he saw the hand signal, and it's a touchdown if he does. And Dorsett never sees it. He snaps his route off, and all it ends up is being a long foul ball where it's a deep completion. And it really was this moment where Tom Brady's on the sideline saying, hey, I gave this guy the signal. He didn't see it. And that was the first time the public expression of the lack of trust. So we saw it last year in New England. But I want to spin it forward to Tampa Bay. And if Mike Evans and Godwin and OJ Howard and Cameron Brate are listening to me, you guys better listen to Tom Brady and what he said yesterday, because he's telling you exactly what he wants. Trust. And I heard Mike Martz say this when he was coaching us as a player one time, and it's important for these guys to understand this as wide receivers for him. As a wide receiver, be where you're supposed to be, when you're supposed to be there, and don't fool Tom Brady. And if those guys really grasp that and realize that's the most important thing to Tom Brady, they will be totally successful in their pass game.
It'll be interesting to see how much time they have to get on a field, practice field. Certainly, it'll be far less than a normal circumstance would be before they're able to start working together. All right, speaking of Tampa in an indirect way, Jameis Winston was a guest on Fox News Channel's America's Newsroom yesterday, discussing a toll-free hotline that he helped establish to answer public questions about the coronavirus. And while he was there, he was also asked about being replaced by Tom Brady in Tampa, and this is what he said.
One thing about Tom Brady is it's understood that he is the GOAT. And for you to get replaced by Tom Brady in a city that you love so much, I guess that's kudos to me. But at the end of the day, it's a competitive sport. We all in the business. So I'm excited for whatever opportunity may hold. And eventually, I'm going to have to play the Tom Brady's, the Patrick Mahomes, and all the other great quarterbacks eventually. So that's how you win Super Bowls, and that's what I want.
I thought that was really interesting. And Dan, I think that the mentality in this is going to be the most important piece. Everyone who watches the show knows that I continue to believe in Jameis Winston. But Dan, you were a backup quarterback and you understand that role. And there's a particular mentality and psychology that goes into that. And I think that's going to be a real challenge. You hear him saying there, I got replaced in Tampa. Yeah, but it's because it was the greatest quarterback of all time. I think that what he has to... He is going to have to change the way he thinks about all of this if he is going to succeed going forward. What do you think?
Greeny, it's about listening. And I've said this, like Jameis Winston needs to listen to what the NFL is telling him, because right now they're telling him, but you're not a starting quarterback in the NFL. The turnovers are you forcing the football into the tight windows is an issue. And you not being able to see coverage change is an issue. And until you get that fixed, no, you are not a starting quarterback in the NFL. And Jameis needs to realize, like, listen, the right choice is different than the choice that you want. And the right choice right now for his career long term is to go be a backup quarterback and to sit and learn, because it doesn't mean that that's the end of the journey. Look at Teddy Bridgewater this year. Teddy Bridgewater had the chance to go be the starting quarterback of the Dolphins, but he made the right choice, not the choice that he wanted. He wanted to start, but the right choice was to go to the healthy place in New Orleans and see if you can get on the field, and he did, and now he is a starting quarterback. But Jameis, listen, you don't have to change your mindset of what you believe in yourself, but you have to be willing to listen to the NFL. And they're telling you right now, you're a backup quarterback, and he needs to realize that's his best opportunity today.
What do you think, Marcus?
He's a backup quarterback to Tom Brady, and obviously, to that point, and Dan mentioned it late when he was talking about it, I don't want Jameis Winston to change that mentality. I want him to change the way he plays and some decision making, but I want him to keep that same mentality. I want every quarterback, if I'm a defensive player like I was for the Dallas Cowboys, I want every quarterback on my team to believe that they are a starter and can make plays and win games. I want every one of them to believe that, and if they don't, they need to go find another job. But with that being said, there are procedures that need to be taken, obviously, for Jameis Winston. I've been a proponent of saying Jameis Winston needs to take a year, watch football, and digest it, and maybe come back with a different approach, and that'll help him as a player. Jameis is a starter by the decision making that he's going to make once he becomes that once again. I don't want him to change his mentality, though.
And there was it's going to be interesting to see how he winds up managing that as he goes forward. But that might be the single biggest hurdle he has to jump to get back to where he wants to be. Meanwhile, we'll talk about the other side of the ball as we continue. If you think Chase Young will not make an immediate impact in the NFL, you are wrong. We will show you why he can be elite starting day one on the way. Let's get up with ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
We're back on Get Up, and we're 2 weeks and counting to the NFL draft. Chase Young remains the favorite to go off the board at number 2 to Washington. Our draft predictor provides the probability that a player will still be available for selection at a certain pick. And if you look at where the model has Chase Young, they say overwhelmingly the best percentage chance is that he'll go at number 2. There is the possibility he goes 3, but you see the numbers fall well off. And Ohio State pass rushers have been very good of late, particularly the Bosa brothers, Joey and Nick, who went 3rd and 2nd respectively in 2016 and 2019. And no one knows the Ohio State players better than our Bobby Carpenter, who probably has seen literally every snap of Chase Young's career. So let's take a close look, Bob, as we have talked so much about the quarterbacks, at what makes this guy such a good prospect.
Yeah, Greeny, don't undersell the fact that the Bosa has been good. I mean, they've been great. And so I think there'll be a lot of that here coming from Chase Young. And because he's a polished pass rusher, he can do it in a multitude of ways. He's not just an athlete. And so as we take a look at this, now we're going to see him, first of all, with the rip. Look at him get the outside arm down. He's able to attack the perimeter, get upfield, and convert with the set. Now we're going to see him with the setup. The swim move coming back underneath, fakes outside, swims, gets arm over, comes right through with the sack. And then lastly, the versatility, the 2-point speed rush. But here's the last piece. Watch him bend and be able to come right back downhill. For a guy that's 6'5", 270 pounds, there are not many human beings in the world, Greeny, that are able to do that. Chase Young, not only is he a great athlete, he's also refined, and he's going to be an elite player from day one in the NFL.
And also a bargain. If you contemplate, you were going through some of this morning, and I think it is interesting. If you look at the money that is involved right now, I'd love you to share that thought.
Well, everybody talks about, you know, you want defense or quarterbacks on rookie deals, and you look at the going rate, $30 million, you get a quarterback on a rookie deal. Washington has that guy on the rookie deal in Dwayne Haskins. But one other piece of this is when you look at Chase Young, what he can provide. Jadeveon Clowney, he's a guy that when you look at him, he's going to cost potentially $20 million. That's what he's asking for. On the other end of this, Chase Young going to be much, much cheaper option. Second pick overall, probably around $8 million. That's why I think the bargain comes in. That happened last year with Nick Bosa. It could happen again here with Chase Young.
Yeah, we brought it up with Von Miller at one time when he was not getting paid a whole lot of money. His team made 2 Super Bowls. Those bargains come at a lot of positions, not just quarterback. He will be, we expect, the second pick in the draft. Meanwhile, from a sports perspective, today would have been, in my opinion, the best day of the year. Today would have been the opening round of the Masters. Now Wright Thompson has a really beautiful look at the tradition of the Masters in the context of the circumstances in which we're currently living.
Everything is quiet in Georgia today. So many beloved traditions are being lost. Day by passing day. And now this one is lost too. It is Thursday, spring in Augusta, and there are no moving crowds of patrons, no pimento cheese sandwiches, No Jack and Gary hitting that ceremonial first tee shot. In Amen Corner, there will be no roars. So while we think of the doctors and nurses who are risking their lives to save strangers because they took an oath, a reminder of what it means to be a citizen and of the social contract we make with one another when we sing the national anthem, it feels appropriate to ask why a golf tournament matters. And the answer is that the Masters, like a few other things, is a way we mark the passage of time and celebrate being alive. Because we all must believe that this too shall pass. We all must believe we will return to the life we left behind, or something close to it. Right now, it is encouraging, maybe even essential, to believe that there will be a Masters come November, and that we will not be scared to stand next to our human brothers and sisters. That's a tradition unlike any other to me. I believe there will be roars again. Roars to rattle the tops of the trees. The return to glory. So today, we gather to relive moments from golfing's past. Not to pretend like we aren't struggling or that we aren't scared, but because that's what living is.
The blossoming of spring, the color of Easter, and the arrival of the Masters coinciding in all their beauty. Augusta National never looked lovely.
They sent me that yesterday, and I watched it twice, and I wanted to make sure that we showed it to you today. And Dan Orlovsky, you and I love this sport more than any other, and I purposely didn't want you to see the piece until we aired it here. What was your reaction?
Incredible. I actually closed my eyes, Greeny, because I can't see, but I closed my eyes just to hear Wright Thompson, and kind of as he narrated it, just had the images pop in my head of, you know, the trees and the flowers and the crowds and the putts going down. And listen, Thursday at the Masters, it's why I'm wearing so much green today. It's one of my favorite days of the year. It's up there with any holiday, the important moments of my family's life. I fell in love with the Masters in 1997. I was 13 years old, and that was the year Tiger won. And I remember watching the front nine, and Tiger was playing bad. And I didn't know much about Tiger Woods, but I had heard the hype, and he was playing bad. I think he shot 40 on the front with Nick Faldo. And then on the back, he shoots like 30. And that's when I fell in love with Thursday at the Masters. It's been one of my favorite days of the year ever since then. And just hearing that by Wright Thompson brought a lot of really good vibes to me, and just a beautiful job by him.
Yeah, it is also a way that we sort of usher in the spring. And for those of us who play the game of golf in cities and parts of the country where the weather doesn't always permit you, it's sort of the beginning of our season as well. It's just as good a day as there is, and Wright is as good as anyone is at putting together thoughts like those. Jack Nicklaus will join me an hour from now to talk about his thoughts, the greatest Masters champion of them all. I'm sorry that we're missing it today, but we look forward to seeing it again soon. Meanwhile, you can watch some of the great memories of Masters history on ESPN. We're going to look back at some of the greatest final rounds in Masters history today, 2 Eastern on ESPN, Bubba's first win in 2012, and then the one Dan was just talking about, Tiger's record breaker in 97. Then tomorrow you'll see Adam Scott's amazing 2013 victory. That's at noon, followed by Tiger again in 2005. That was the year that featured his legendary chip-in on the par 316. Lots of Masters action coming your way here on ESPN. Meanwhile, coming your way, if the NBA season is canceled, has LeBron James lost his last best chance to win another championship? Jalen Rose answers that question and more when he joins us next. Get up with ESPN.